Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Welcome to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, also known as PTS Dog.
And I'm your host, Scav.
I want to let the audience know, you know, Scav and I, we've worked together. We share information back and forth.
I run Scout as my service dog. He's a hearing dog, PTSD dog.
We're here to bring you news, interviews, and information about service dogs and about matters that are of interest to the service dog community.
Thank you for joining us on the Service Dog Show on DV Radio, WDVR.
Welcome to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, PTS Dog, also known as Joaquin Watai.
And I'm your host, Scav.
We're going to talk about reasonable accommodations for employment this week. This is a subject I think we've seen coming up frequently in the PTS Dog group. I've seen it in other places in service dog groups. And I don't know about you, Scav, but I have seen some horrible advice. So there's a couple reasons why we're doing this show. First of all, you are employed with a service dog, so you have experience directly. Now, you were already with the company when you decided to go the service dog route. We'll cover that next week when we bring on DV Nightmare. But what we're going to talk about is the hiring process when a service dog is involved. And for that, we brought special guest Nevermore, who works for a large corporation that we will may or may not name, but she is involved on occasion in the hiring process and in the reasonable accommodation process. Nevermore, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello.
So, like I said, I keep seeing it in the PTS Dog group and other groups. I need to, you know, somebody tell me how I can get a job with a service dog. And I have seen terrible advice. Don't tell them about your service dog until the third interview. Don't tell them about your service dog. You know, don't take your service dog to your interviews. Don't take your service dog when you fill out the application. And I have to say that's some of the dumbest stuff I've ever seen.
I'm with you right there, bud.
Look, if you're trying to get a job, what you are trying to do is convince the company hiring that you are capable of doing the job and that you're the best choice. So if you don't have your service dog with you from the very beginning, the immediate and obvious question they're going to ask is, well, how come you came in to fill out the application without the dog? How come you came to one interview or two interviews without the dog? How come you all of a sudden need it now? You didn't need the dog then. And I guess the issue is, if you're not honest and upfront with the employer from the very beginning, then why would they hire you knowing that you're a liar?
Correct. I used to have some management background and do some hiring and firing myself. And when we talked about this, I sat there and I'm thinking, what would these people be hiding that they didn't bring their service dog with them? Mm-hmm. Why do they need the service dog in the first place if they're not bringing them with, you know, at the interview?
Well, and that's just, and you know, that's kind of the whole thing is, look, as a community, one of the mantras, I guess, if you want to use that word, one of the things we say often is the service dog legally is considered medical equipment, durable medical equipment, just like a wheelchair.
Correct.
It's not saying we treat our service dogs like wheelchairs. It's saying legally the same kind of considerations for accommodation are required by law. So if you're coming into interviews without your service dog, put yourself in a wheelchair. Would you go into the interviews without a wheelchair?
You're a disabled person. And that service dog is your wheelchair. Why are you showing up anywhere without your service dog?
Yeah. And I'm not talking about making, you know, I'm not talking about making on the fly decisions. Like if you're stopping at a rest area, you know, not taking the dog in because different states and, you know, the complications or, you know, there are some places I don't take Skeeter because just of his size. Like I will not take him in the liquor store because his tail is like a baseball bat and he could cost me $1,000 just because he's a happy dog. You know, I mean, it just, but thinking about it, when you're looking at employment and you're looking at the kind of stressful environment that you're dealing with and maybe some activities you may or may not have to do and the kind of support your service dog gives you, why would you lie about it? Why would you try to hide it? And from the standpoint of an employer, if you aren't being upfront about your disability from the get-go, if you're lying, because that's what you're doing, omission is a lie still. Why would I hire you to, you know, handle money or documentation that may be of sensitive nature? If you can't be upfront and honest about, you know, the fact that you're disabled when you're trying to get hired. And Nevermore, you told me a story about, kind of that, an example of that, a person who applied for a job, made it all the way through the interview process, showed up for the first day of work and asked for accommodation.
Yeah, certain job requirements, you sign that you're physically or mentally, depending on the job, capable of doing. And this happened to be for a host position on a door. And they had already accepted their job offer. You do all of that before orientation. And they had accepted their job offer saying that they could do prolonged standing and so forth and so on. The very first day that she's not in training and shows up for the door, she says, "You're going to have to give me a chair." And I said, "Did you get injured?" "Well, no, I'm disabled." And I said, "Was the disability before the hiring process?" "Well, yeah." I said, "But you signed the job offer stating that you were physically able to do this." She's like, "Well, yeah." And I was like, "But you lied on an application. Now you need a reasonable accommodation." I said, "You're going to actually have to do like everybody else. And we can't just fire you because you just showed up and, you know." But when we spoke to HR, they're like, we're not going to even do this. She physically, you know, she literally lied on the application. I said, "Had you have come in, there would have been no problem with you sitting, but you kind of showed up after the fact and said you are no longer allowed. You didn't get injured after, you know, you showed up saying you could do the job and now you're saying you can't. We hired you knowing that you could do the job without accommodations. And I would have hired you with the accommodations because there's no rule that says you can't sit on a stool to do this."
Right.
You know, the problem is you showed up and now you're going, "Oh, by the way," and I'm going, "That's not how this works. That's not how you go about reasonable accommodations." Now, say tomorrow I wanted to start the same job I'm doing and I want to add the poo skeeter into it. I'm going to have to go to the ADA and, you know, because every workplace has to do a reasonable accommodation. There's a packet, they walk you through it, whatever. You have to apply for that. You don't just get to show up and say, "Hey, this is what you're going to do."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, if you would come into our warehouse, we have different job positions, different applications for each job position. You reasonably have to be able to lift 50 pounds. Some of these cases of candy or tobacco or whatever, they get pretty heavy. So, and same thing, if you came in and filled out that application and you wrote on there, "Yeah, you can lift 50 pounds," and you come in and say, "Well, I can't lift that, but I have a back injury." It's the same thing as that woman just said, but, you know, she needs a chair.
So a resource that is very good, very clear, and goes in depth about job finding with a disability is AskJan, AskJan.org. And they have and I've been wading through the thickness of their section about service dogs and employment throughout the day. Now, first of all, employment accommodation does not fall under Titles 2 or 3 of the ADA. It falls under Title 1. So equal access to employment is different legally than equal access to a place of business or of state and local government, which are covered by Titles 2 and 3. Title 1 does not even define a service dog. It relies on Titles 2 and 3 for their definition. So there's a couple of things that I've come across that I want to share. First of all, what it means, first of all, is that employers can try to offer other accommodations. For example, if you use a mobility assistance dog, they may try to come up with solutions for access, you know, getting into and out of the building. Like if there's a, if you need help with, from your dog steadying yourself on stairs, there's an elevator. Or you need help, you know, one of the functions that Skeeter provides as far as mobility assistance for me is getting up and down from seated position. Sometimes chairs are a little bit low and I have to have some way of boosting myself up or getting pulled up. And Freya's playing with her toys in the background. And Skeeter provides that counterbalance for me so that I have a little momentum to be able to get up and down. So, you know, that could be alleviated by purchasing special ergonomic chairs or installing grab rails onto the in the cubicle. You know, there are other ways that that could be accommodated. Now, what an employer couldn't accommodate real easily is assistance with things like PTSD. Mm-hmm. Because unless you, you know, unless you're fully kitted up and got an armed battle buddy right beside you, you know, so they have to hire you and your battle buddy. That doesn't really work that way. So, you know, if you're not upfront about it, and you're not clear and you're not communicating, ultimately it can cause a problem. But the employer has the right under law to try and figure out what the most effective accommodation is. Obviously, we understand that there isn't any better accommodation, including medication, when we're talking about PTSD. But here's the other side of it. Employers don't necessarily understand that. Scav, you've talked to me a lot about your frequent visits with HR.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about, because what you're talking about is accommodation for your disability, right?
Right.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about the give and take there.
Well, I don't take authority well, and when you get in my face, I get it confrontational. And you know, we've got some salespeople that like to get in my face, and when that happens, I try to warn them off. And when that doesn't happen, then some tempers fly. Mm-hmm. So then, of course, I end up being the bad guy and I have to go see HR. Or another issue could be verbiage. They're not used to the army language and lingo.
You mean, are you fucking stupid? Isn't acceptable in the workplace?
Yeah, and we had one female come in off the road and she just wasn't getting what I was laying down, and she started screaming at me, and I told her that ease her cocksucker. And next thing I know, I was walking down the hallway. So those are my frequent visits, you know. It's just in the civilian workforce, that doesn't go real well. Yeah.
That's common. I mean, that's how we communicate in the military, because Honestly, a lot of the times in a lot of situations, it is life or death, and you don't have time for anybody's feelings. And that's a hard transition to make back. Nevermore, you have something to add.
I do want to add that just because you request reasonable accommodations doesn't mean that the company actually has to give you those. A lot of people are under that misconception, well, because I'm disabled, you have to. Mm-hmm. The thing is, they have to take in to accord health and safety. Also, sometimes it's not practical. I've noticed a lot in these groups, they're like, they want you to say that they're not hiring you so that they can literally just sue you. And that's not how this works. If, say, something were to happen to me tomorrow and I have to go back to work and ask for reasonable accommodations, my job entails walking the sales floor all day long. If I can no longer walk and, you know, I'm not able to perform the job that they need, they don't have to give me the accommodation for that job. They do have to offer me another position in which I'm, you know, I'm physically suited for. But this misconception that because you asked for it, you should get it. Most companies, unless they're small companies, don't make that determination. They literally make you submit the paperwork and it's decided by corporate office. And then corporate comes back in because they have the legal experts to make sure that we are doing right by you, us, and everybody involved in that. We're not violating anybody's civil rights. We're not violating the ADA. We have a person currently that wears sunglasses because she has an eye injury. She had to submit an ADA, and we don't say reasonable accommodations. If we see an associate doing, you know, prolonged sitting or something, and all we ask is, are they on an ADA? We don't say, are they on an ADA? If the answer is yes, then we know that they're allowed to be doing that, whatever. But this misconception that, well, because I show up and I have a dog, you have to. If you cut meat for a living, or you work in a plant that is making candy and your dog has hair, they don't have to accommodate you because Skeeter's Magical Floofs would be in everybody's Laffy Taffy.
Right.
Just saying, just because you're disabled doesn't mean that you get that right automatically.
Right.
There are things,
well,
positions where it's not safe.
And there are other considerations. The other thing is that reasonable accommodations for disability is one thing that employers have to think about. But they also have to think about other civil rights accommodations. They have to try to accommodate people's religions. Some religions do not consider dogs to be clean. Mm-hmm. And so they have to take that into consideration that, so, you know, so-and-so's religion down the hall doesn't allow them to interact with dogs. There are people with allergies. The way you accommodate people with allergies is physically, you try to, you know, put their cubicles on opposite sides of the floor, you know, things like that to work around that. But, you know, the thing about dog allergies is it requires contact. If you're not, you know, if you're not constantly within, you know, 6 or 10 feet of the dog, it's not going to affect your allergies. And I have seen people who have psychosomatic dog allergies. They see a dog and start sneezing. That's just ridiculous. If you're not rubbing the dog's fur all over your body, you're not going to have an allergic reaction. But, you know, the employer has to take into consideration more than just your disability. They have to, you know, equal opportunity employment includes religious preference. It includes sexual preference. It includes allergies. It includes disability. It includes, they have to try to accommodate everybody. If you want to go to work for instance, at a Muslim business where most of the people are Muslim, some sects of Islam consider dogs unclean and won't allow dogs in their presence. They have to take that into consideration. If 80 or 90% of the company believes that, guess what? They're not going to be able to accommodate you because it will isolate them. Is that fair or right? How do you be 100% completely fair to everybody? You can't. Somebody's going to get the short end of the stick. You know, the other side of that is, why would I fight to go to work at a place where I'm going to be reviled because they use a service dog because it's against their religious beliefs? I don't want to be anywhere near that.
Right. And you got to come in this remembering that you're a disabled person. You have a disability.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be able to do everything that a physically fit person is able to do. You know, you and I discussed that yesterday with the whole toe motor scenario. You know, those toe motors I can barely fit in one by myself. You're not going to get you and a service dog, even if it's a toy poodle, in there safely. And then OSHA is going to be all over our ass if you do.
Right, right. And those, we're talking about the little one person standing forklifts, folks.
Correct.
That they use in warehouses to load and move stuff. There's no safe, practical way to have a service dog with you while you're running that little forklift. Even if the dog's trained to walk beside you, there's still, you know, outside of the forklift, there's still safety concerns and I mean, there's still issues. And the other thing that the business, that as they're hiring, has to consider is safety. Is it safe to have a dog in this situation? If you're sitting in a cubicle, you know, in a cube farm behind a desk doing computer work, it's not that bad. Scav, you, where you work, you have a warehouse.
Correct.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you told me that you guys had to do some safety training and some safety planning about, because sometimes you have to go down on the floor with Scout.
As soon as we walk through one of those main doors into the warehouse, we have to put on a orange vest.
Okay.
And then we have to stay within certain like painted lines, walkway lines, and then tow motors have right of way through there. We have to keep our eyes open for them. And the guys out there on the tow motors and anybody working in a warehouse, they wear a yellow vest. They wear, I believe they wear a certain style boot. They wear eye protection. They wear harnesses. I mean, they fall under the OSHA standards.
Right.
So, you know, somebody like that is not going to be able to have a service dog and work that kind of job.
But I'm sorry, what I'm asking is when you have to go on the floor and you obviously have Scav with you, you had to make some adjustments to what you do.
Correct. Yeah, I do still go out there with him, but it's, you know, it's very tedious because where we go, the electrical equipment is not in dangerous territory for us. But right. To get there, we do have to travel through dangerous territories.
Right, right.
I think one thing people need to remember is the company's not just having to, any company, cubicle or whatever, is not just having to follow the Americans with Disabilities Act. They're also having to follow OSHA. They're also having to make sure that they're doing the equal opportunity. Some places have to do health regulations, and they deal with the health department. There are 99,000 people's hands in a cookie jar in my corporation. So when I'm doing something, I don't just have to say, is this making sure that these 10 people are safe? I have to make sure that it's not going to be a domino effect on 1,000 different things. Now, yes, I'm training a service dog. My service dog will not be able to go to work with me. I have things in place at work. And people can go, well, it can't be that bad, blah, blah, blah. It is that bad, but we have a contingency plan for me at work. I have, and I hate to use the word, but I have my safe space. I have my ability to flee when I need to. I am allowed to, if it's in the middle of an apprehension and I get overwhelmed, I'm allowed to call somebody to replace me. I am allowed to walk outside the building, go around back, beat up the trash can, whatever I need to do. I have plans in place. It's not through an ADA. It just happens to be that I've been with the company a long, long time. And I can, each store manager is in charge of their facility. You know, she could very easily say, well, if we're going to do all this, you need an ADA. That's great. I happen to be in a position where he calls it something, but I can push certain issues away and focus on what I'm doing 80% of the time. But I have a contingency plan, and it's not safe for a dog. If I go to apprehend somebody and I've got my Frey trained, ready to go, and they kick my dog, I'm going to lose my job. Or the shoplifter kicks me and Frey, not because she's a pibble, but because she's protecting her mommy, bites the shoplifter. Guess who's now liable? Not me. The entire freaking corporation just became liable because my doggy bit somebody, protecting me, not because she's not trained. Right. Let me make that distinction, because there's going to be an asshole.
Yeah.
You can't kick any service dog handler, and I don't care if it's a 5-pound dog or a 200-pound dog. That dog's not going to stand there and let you just keep kicking their owner. Okay? Trained, not to bite, whatever. But there are just scenarios where it's impossible. No matter what you do, how safe you want to be, what you want, you cannot bring your dog.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to not get in hired because you have a service dog. And no company's going to be dumb enough, and if they are, then they get what they deserve. But no company's going to be dumb enough to look you dead in your face and go, I'm not hiring you because you're disabled, because that's illegal. I understand that you don't want to spring that dog on them right out the gate because, well, now they're not even going to consider me. Do you really want to work in a shithole like that anyway?
Right. You know, walking in and I just did all that research for that one truck driver.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that all his I's were dotted and his T's were crossed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it sucks and I know it's harder to get a job with your service dog, but as they become more and more of a norm, it will get easier and easier, but you still can't be a cook in a kitchen. Okay. Yep. You can't be a gourmet chef with your dog. I'm not trying to be rude or miniature horse, but you cannot legally, because of health code, have a dog back there.
Yep.
Okay. You are putting such a huge liability on people. Skeeter's a floof monster, so we've probably eaten a shit ton of dog hair. But nobody wants to go to a restaurant and find a dog hair in the food.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, you could get a hairless dog, but that dog, what if you've got the dog parked out of the way and you hit a dinner rush and the dog moves its tail even a quarter of an inch and a waiter steps on it and drops boiling soup down your dog?
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about more things than just yourself. You are not only responsible for you, but you're responsible to make sure that's safe. And I would never want to put Skeeter or Frey Frey in a situation where I know that they're in harm's way intentionally, and I still allow it because I need a service dog.
That's absolutely correct. The other half of the equation that a lot of people are missing is that you are 100% responsible for the safety of your dog. Now, if say a freak accident happened and your service dog was injured, that would probably lie on the, you know, as far as liability, would lie on the responsibility of the company. But in situations where it's completely preventable, if you're not an asshole about it, guess what? You're the one who's responsible. You're responsible to make sure that dog doesn't get harmed. And that's another consideration that the company has to take into account themselves. Is, look, is it even safe for the dog to come here? And think about this. They have to consider, is it safe for the dog to come to work with you with the other workers? Or are we going to have problems with the other workers? Because that's always a possibility. The other employees might have issue with the dog. And they have to take that into consideration. And I'm sorry, but a 15 or 20 year employee who hates dogs or is absolutely terrified of dogs, they're gonna put more weight on that person who's been there longer than you, who's trying to get hired. You're not even a new hire yet. What are they going to have to change, and what's it going to cost them? Remember, all businesses are in business for one purpose and one purpose only: to make money.
Right.
So what will it cost us? They have to weigh this. They have to put this in consideration. If we offer these accommodations, what will it cost us? Is that fair? Well, I mean, I guess that depends on your political point of view. You know, if you believe in socialism and that everybody should be equal no matter what, then no, that's not fair, because it changes the levels of playing fields. If you understand how capitalism works and you understand that the point of the business is to make money, it makes sense that they're going to discern between what is more advantageous to them. We're going to get a little bit more into this accommodation and we're going to kind of walk through a hiring process, if you will, after the break. But before we go to break, we need to thank WDVR, DV Radio, for allowing the Service Dog Show to broadcast. Remember that DV Radio is free of charge. It is free to the listener. And it is free for us to do programs on DV Radio. However, it does cost DV Radio. You can help make sure that the quality program that you get from DV Radio is not costing us too much by joining the Patreon. It's patreon.com/DV Radio and supporting our efforts. Please check it out. Do us a favor and give us a little help if you can. There are, of course, different levels for patrons if they're interested, if you're interested in hearing outtakes and pre-shows and, you know, some of the hijinks that go on. Patreon level, Patreon members get to hear that. So check it out, patreon.com/DV Radio. Help support us so that we can continue to provide the quality content that we do for you. We will be back right after these breaks on DV Radio, WDVR.
DV Radio.
What's DV Radio?
DV Radio is for you, the veteran, active duty service member, caregiver, and civilian supporter of the military. DVRadio.net is the online veteran network made for and by veterans. From original shows to syndication, you can find it here on DVRadio.net. In an effort to continue our mission and make better quality shows for each and every one of you, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/DVRadio. Whether you can only pledge $1 per month or that entire $1 million inheritance your uncle left you, there's a tier with rewards waiting for you. So why not keep DV Radio running and get rewarded at the same time? Head to patreon.com/DV Radio now. That's patreon.com/DV Radio.
DV Radio.
Shooters Express is Charlotte's number one destination for all personal defense, sport, instruction, and recreational shooting supplies. They offer concealed carry classes for only $29.95. That's only $29.95 for concealed carry classes. And if you're military or law enforcement, you'll receive great deals and be eligible for even more at Shooters Express. So head over to Shooters Express in Belmont, North Carolina, or visit shootersexpress.com for more information and monthly deals. That's Shooters Express in Belmont, North Carolina.
This is not a paid endorsement from Shooters Express and is provided solely by DV Radio free of charge.
You're tuned in to DV Radio, where the shenanigans never end. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, also known as PTS Dog.
And I'm your host, Gav.
And with us tonight is Nevermore, and we're talking about reasonable accommodations for employment. Nevermore just brought up a great point during the break. If you want a job at a place, say, for example, like Walmart, with your service dog at your side, think about your service dog's safety. As Nevermore will I'm sure agree, Walmart has a corporate policy that they ask, is that a service dog? And if the person says yes, they don't ask any more questions. Not only that, but only members of management are allowed to ask that an unruly or out of control animal be removed. Sometimes it's hard to locate those managers. Are you willing to bring your dog into an environment where their safety is literally at risk every time somebody brings an untrained pet into the store? I mean, is it that worth it to you to get that job that you're going to, because you're literally going to put your service dog at risk? I'm sorry, but one of the places where I've heard the most stories about attacks from untrained animals is Walmart. Do you really want to work there? And that's not that Walmart's a bad job. It's to look at the environment, look at the safety. Same thing like we were talking about with Scav, working on the warehouse floor. He can't with Scout because it is an industrial environment. They've got these forklifts and you know, heavy loading equipment moving up and down. And even when he's trying to get from point A to point B to do some work on electronics, he's got to be careful with Scout and stay in within these lines and watch out for the equipment.
Well, not only that, but like take a pet store. You think, oh, well, this is a great idea. Okay, if you think Walmart's bad, any pet store is going to have people that have got like just dogs running loose. I mean, you could go in there at any moment and somebody's random doggo bite you because they're not paying attention to it. So you think, oh, well, it's going to be pet friendly. But is that really a smart idea when your trained service dog is going to be practically defenseless? And I know what you're saying. Well, my service dog can defend itself. If your service dog tears up another dog, it's retirement.
Yep. Right.
And if you don't, you're now at any episode past that, you're legally responsible for.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, PetSmart and Lowe's are two of the worst places that I even think about going with Scout.
And it, you know, and that's not to say that it can't be done. There is that Lowe's in Texas that hired the veteran and his service dog, and it can be done, but you need to understand that the risk you're putting your dog at, and therefore yourself. Remember, like we talked about earlier, and I'm not sure if we mentioned this on the program yet, but we were talking in the pre-show. Look, remember that in the service dog community, we like to point out to people that your service dog has the same legal standing as a piece of durable medical equipment as a wheelchair. So if you're going into an interview to get hired, and you need a wheelchair, but you are afraid to ask about reasonable accommodations, would you not wheel in to the meeting? You know, you're missing your legs from the knee down on both sides. How, you know, but you're not gonna use your wheelchair to go into the interview? Well, it's right. The same exact situation with your service dog. Let's get into that hiring process. Let's get into the hiring process, because one of the worst pieces of advice that I have seen bandied about, it's been put out in this PTS dog group, is don't say anything about your service dog until the second or third interview. No. That is the worst advice I think you could ever give. And again, we went over this point because, so you've been lying and you're giving the company reason to say, well, you didn't need the dog for your first interview or in your second interview. How come you need it all of a sudden now?
Yeah, if you just show up at work after they hire you with a dog, they're going to look at you like, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah. And we'll get into that. We'll get into requesting reasonable accommodation after you already work at the company and have for some time next week when we bring on DV Nightmare. And the reason we're separating it is because first we want to talk about hiring. We want to talk about, look, I need a job. I'm disabled and I use a service dog. What do I need to do? How do I go about requesting reasonable accommodation? It's real easy. First of all, if you use a service dog, you use a service dog. So when you walk in the door to get a job application, take your dog. Be upfront about it from the very beginning. Because like we explained in the first part of the show, if you're going to try to hide it and spring it on them, guess what? It doesn't work that way. You will get fired or never get hired.
Yeah, that'll come back to, it'll backfire on you real quick.
It absolutely will. If you wear a prosthetic, are you going to lie and say, well, some days I can't wear the prosthetic, so I have to use my wheelchair? Or are you going to be very upfront about it and say, most of the time I can use the prosthetic, but there are times when I have to use the wheelchair. So I need to be able to have accessibility. I need to, an elevator if it's on the third floor, and you know, I need to try and have a handicapped accessible parking space. And there are days, you know, my cubicle has to be wheelchair accessible because there are days when I can't use my prosthetic. You're upfront about it immediately. Why would you be any different with a service dog? Why would you lie? It doesn't make sense from a hiring perspective. Look, would either of you hire somebody if they pulled this?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, no, there's no way. I mean, if you surprise me on the end, I know I'm not most people, but I'm pretty open about the whole service dog thing. Now, I do have to take in consideration the position you're applying for and what you're going to be doing and that kind of thing, but I'm pretty open to it. So if you come in honest, I'm going to be like, okay, so you might not be able to do this job that you're applying for, but this sounds like a great idea that would work for you and your dog. But if you show up with your dog in tow and are like, hey, I'm here for my first day, I'm going to be like, that's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. You can't just show up and people really have it in their head that because you're disabled, that you automatically have that legal right. And that if you don't get your way, you're going to sue. And I'm sitting there going, if you just spring it on them, you've basically lied up front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even if they're able to do the job that you hired them for and they show up with this dog, or that, what triggers in my mind is, what are you going to deceive me of next?
Or what are you going to pull on me next? Or the whole fact that you basically lied on your job application because you said you were able to do it, and now you're saying you can't do it without. Right. So, I mean, you can be terminated for just lying on your job application.
Yep, absolutely. And that goes double for interviews. You show up to one or two interviews without the dog, and all of a sudden the dog's there. They're going to be like, well, this person's a liar. We don't want a liar in our company.
Right.
Plain and simple, folks, be upfront about the fact that you use a service dog. It's like it's embarrassing or something. I'm not embarrassed to Skeeter. Well, it does embarrass me when he sheds heavily and I have to pick up after him. But I'm not embarrassed that I use Skeeter. I'm not trying to hide the fact that I'm disabled. I can't. There's a 100-pound Malamute next to me. It's pretty freaking obvious I'm disabled.
I mean, I was a little kind of embarrassed when he decided that your doctor was like his best friend and he sticks his nose up his pants leg out of nowhere. I was mortified because he takes to people, but never like that. And I look over and I'm like, and the doc's just daily talking with a big 100-pound nose up his freaking pants leg. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I don't know what to do.
Skeeter has people. There are some people who are Skeeter's people, and he really liked the physical therapist. When I got my surgery on my arm, that dude was like, Skeeter was like, I like this guy. I don't know what the deal was. Maybe the guy rubbed his ankles with bacon. I don't know. But Skeeter was like, this is my person. Oh my goodness. It was embarrassing. But as far as like, you know, being embarrassed about my disability, I'm not embarrassed. It's nobody's business what my disability is. I happen to put it out there because of what I do and, you know, who I'm trying to reach. But, when it comes to it, that's something we need to talk about, though, is, look, it's not people's business, except when you're trying to get a job and you're asking for reasonable accommodation. Guess what? Under Title I of the ADA, the business does have the right to ask you what your disability is. They can legally say, well, why do you need a service dog?
Absolutely. Plenty of time with my HR guy, my resources guy, about that. Now, that information didn't leave that room, but him and I had several hours talking specifically about me and Scout and what everything was going on.
It doesn't violate HIPAA if they need information from your doctor. They don't need your entire health record. They need health records specifically regarding the assistance, the disability that the dog provides assistance with. So, for example, Scav, you both have PTSD and hearing loss, but you also have a blood condition, and Scout alerts you when you're bleeding because you can't feel anything from, you know, in your lower legs.
Right.
So you could, if Scout wasn't trained to alert to the bleeding, you could have a serious problem because, you know, when your body loses blood, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, so you perhaps, you know, the primary reason, there's two big reasons why you have Scout with you. One being PTSD, two being hearing alert. Because even with hearing aids, you can't always hear somebody approaching, but Scout knows.
Yep.
Okay. So did you even talk to HR about the bleeding?
Yeah. Actually, I did. I went back and had a second meeting with them after that was all said and done.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So as the conditions change, I revisit it.
Ah, okay. So initially that wasn't necessary.
No.
Okay. So I guess the key point here is, and the people that people need to take away is, communicate with your employer.
Right.
Communicate your needs. Communicate. Just say, hey, you know, for perfect example with me and Skeeter. Skeeter initially was PTSD only. Well, you know what? I'm not getting younger and my back isn't getting better. And we've had to work in some mobility assistance. So but, I would have to say to the, you know, I would have to go to HR and say, you know, I'm using him more and more to help me do things like get up out of chairs and open doors and pull a cart if I'm using a grocery cart, you know.
And that's the thing. You only have to talk to the HR people.
Yeah.
They're the only ones that need to know. Nobody else in that building has to know anything about your life.
Yep.
That's exactly right. As soon as you say a reasonable accommodation to any of us, we're going to tell you to go back and see our personnel manager. They're going to give you the packet. They're going to, even though you're going to get notified, they're still, even though they're not required to, they're going to say, hey, the stuff came back and you're still missing this and this and this. If you need to submit that, let me know. They're going to help you fax it, but you don't have to come back after you get the reasonable accommodation and look at me and say, I have to wear sunglasses now because I scratched my cornea and they said it's going to be 6 months. All you have to do is tell me I'm allowed to wear sunglasses. I'm not allowed to ask you why. You know, if I say, hey, man, are you supposed to be sitting for 45 minutes? I have an ADA. That's all I'm allowed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And again, remember, the general public, general access, nobody has a right to know what your disability is. Okay. They can't say, well, why do you have that dog? But when you're asking, when you are requesting reasonable accommodation from the company, they have to understand why, so that they can figure out if the dog is the best way to accommodate you. Perfect. Another perfect example. They might decide, yeah, we can hire you. You know how to do this job, but because we have other things going on at the office building, we're going to offer you the accommodation of working from home. Say for IT support, it may be practical that a programmer is able to do everything from home on a computer. And they don't need to come to the office as long as they're putting in the hours, clocking in and doing the work, right? And so the accommodation is, yeah, we can hire you. We want your skills. But in order to accommodate your need for your service dog, we need you to work at home.
And believe it or not, when Scout got sick, there were 3 days that I was able to pull that off. And unless there's a physical need for me to put hands on a device, I can actually do everything from the desk. I'm talking to you right now.
Yeah. And so, you know, reasonable accommodation doesn't just mean, okay, well, we have to allow the dog in the building now.
Right.
There are solutions. There are other ways to do it. But in order for the company to decide how best, if you're the individual that they want to hire because you have the skills they need, they need to be invasive. They need to be intrusive and understand. And it should be in larger companies. Now, obviously small mom and pop companies, little boutique, on First Avenue downtown, they're not going to have this HR and EEOC type structure. We understand that. Okay. But what we're getting at is legally any employer needs to understand why you need a service dog, why they need to accommodate you to perform the job.
If you're not an asshole and you're not fighting with these people and you're playing ball and you've got a skill set that's valuable, they'll play ball with you. They really will. I mean, at first when I introduced all this, I got a little bit of a pull, but later on, we'll get into that, like you said, in the next episode. Right now it's fantastic. I mean, the VP comes and sees me in Scout every morning. You know, before I never saw him. Mm-hmm. And now we have an open line of communication. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, there's a skill that they need from me and it's actually made my life easier. It's made their life easier. You know, so having Scout there has made all of our lives easier. When we move through the building, people smile. Yeah. You know, we had one lady that is afraid of dogs. She's less afraid of dogs now.
Mm-hmm. Because Scout is one of those evil, evil, dangerous murder doggy pibbles. So
yes, it's him. But
well, and you could also look at it like this: if it is a smaller, privately owned business, they may not even put you through the reasonable accommodations process. They may go, "Okay, we've never done this, so why don't we try it this way?" And you bring your dog and you do your job over there, and they may not put you through it and may have an agreement Or it may be a place that just absolutely loves dogs, you know, and are like, oh, sure, no problem.
Yeah.
But be careful, because remember, Sally Sue may see it, and suddenly her emotional support animal is a service dog. And mm-hmm. so you just got to remember, careful what you wish for.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And remember too, you know, you had to bring up emotional support animals. Look, we are not downplaying the importance of emotional support animals in the lives of their disabled owners. Okay. However, the Americans with Disabilities Act does not protect the use of emotional support animals anywhere. Emotional support animals are covered by the Fair Housing Act and the Air Carriers Access Act for air travel and housing, not for public employment or public access. That is the law. It doesn't have anything to do with whether or not we think service dogs are better than ESAs, nothing like that. It is what the law says, period.
I mean, we all agree that a puppy in a drawer would make my day so much better, but it's just not practical, okay?
Right. Yeah, it's not practical or safe for either of you.
And trust me, if I didn't have to take Scout to work every day, it would be a blessing.
Right?
To be able to just get up and go and come home and see him happy by himself here at the house or whatnot. Having a service dog is a pain in the ass.
It's not the easy way.
I mean, you don't have to just... You know, it's nice for me, because if I'm having a day and I can put it off to the last minute, get up and get ready for work. If I had to take, and especially Skeeter with his size, if I had to take Skeeter to work for 8 hours, okay, so I have to pack him waters, have to pack his food, have to brush him before we go because he's a fluff ball of, you know, he emits all kinds of immaculate floof. I would have to pack his potty bags. I would literally have to have a doggy diaper bag every single day.
Right.
I would also, you know, just because I don't have to pee right now, so I'm not ready to take my break. But now I have to take my break because he's ready to pee, you know?
That reminds me, part of reasonable accommodations with the service dog, and this is something I didn't know, I learned this the other day, they cannot charge you for your break when you have to potty your service dog. That's an accommodation that the business has to make under the ADA. I didn't know that. However,
yeah, and I know they can't stop you from taking him out to potty, but I'm saying if you're not ready to get up and go out, but he is, you're getting up and ready to go out whether you're in the middle of something or not.
Well, but the other part of that is if you decide to take advantage of the fact that your service dog needs to potty, so you're going to have a smoke, then you're smoking on company time, not on your break.
Right.
Then there's an issue.
Yep. You literally, unless I'm taking my break, I would literally only be able to take him out to potty and back in, not walk out there, have a sick. But like I said, and people will abuse that. But, you know, if I'm in the middle of something and I just can't stop, but I don't want him pooping in the floor, you know, I'm with him. It's a pain in the butt. You literally have to worry about it. It's like taking a toddler to work with you. Nobody wants to take their toddler to work.
Right, and winter's
Tyler's going to drive you crazy all day.
Winter's coming. You know, today it rained, so you have a special cover on your seat in the back of the Jeep, so when he jumps in and out, you're not getting mud everywhere. And then at work, I have to have a blanket, and it's got to be brought home every once in a while so the odor doesn't get there. You don't want to offend your coworkers. And you're right. It's like having a kid with you at all times.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely is. And again, we're not trying to say – here, what we're trying to get across, folks, is really don't be a dick.
And right. it's not as simple as they have to.
Yeah,
there is a million and one things that go into that. The advice I've been seeing is either lie, hide it, don't say anything until they actually offer you the job. That way, when they say, well, we're no longer interested, we can sue you. No, that's not how that works. The judge is going to be like, okay, so you're suing because you literally waited until they said, oh, by the way, we're hiring you. Oh, by the way, I have a service dog. You didn't give them the opportunity.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's just not that simple of a process. Everybody wishes they could take whatever they wanted to work to get the day through. If that were the case, I wouldn't take the service dog. I would take the Jack Daniels.
Right.
But you Absolutely. Can't go to work drunk, you know? I mean, I guess you could, but you wouldn't get to keep your job. The point of it is it's not There are plenty of jobs out there that will take service dogs. Don't act like the one job that you had your heart set on and you decided that you were going to be a dick about it and you didn't get it. Well, they're just not hiring me. Honestly, if they don't hire you because you have a service dog, you don't want to work there anyway, but they're never going to be dumb enough to say it because they can be sued.
Right.
So if you're going around applying for jobs, waiting for them to say it, it's usually HR that's doing the hiring, not some newbie that doesn't understand the laws. They're not going to say something that stupid.
Oh, before I forget, if you're going to a company like mine that makes you fill an application out before you even see HR, you make sure you put on that application that you have a service dog.
Yes. Take the service dog with you when you go get the application.
Yep. We make you fill it out on the spot in our convenience learning center, and our, you know, receptionist watches you fill it out. You don't leave the building with it. So if it was me, I'd be walking in there with Scout asking for an application, sitting down, fill it out. She would see that I have it, but make sure you put, you have a service dog. It's one of the requirements we're going to ask for.
And if
you're, most applications do say, do you have a disability that would need reasonable accommodations? 95% right. of applications today do say that.
Right.
And they don't ask the disability. They ask, is there one present?
And that first impression, when that receptionist takes that application up to HR and says, hey, he had a service dog and that dog was amazing.
Right.
That can only count in your favor if your dog's actually trained to behave itself in public and, you know, meet the requirements of the ADA. So again, why are you hiding it?
And that's another good point. If you do make it through all of that and your dog is acting a fool, they can revoke your reasonable accommodations because you didn't uphold your end of the ADA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Responsibility, back to that art.
And if you're you're untouchable.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
Nope.
And if you show up at a company that has a legit team, they're going to ask one of us to take a look and make sure it's actually a service dog.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's absolutely right. Okay. So I'm going to boil down the takeaways real quick because it's about time to wrap up. What we want you to take from this, first of all, is don't be a dick. Be upfront about your disability and the fact that you are requesting reasonable accommodation when you apply for your job. Be understanding. Understand that there may be positions that they simply cannot accommodate you for your safety, your dog's safety, or the safety of other employees. Understand that companies, although they cannot say, well, no, we won't hire you because you have a service dog, with the exception of things like, you know, working in a kitchen or meat packing, things like that, where they can't because of health and safety reasons, but understand that during the hiring process, they're looking at 50, 60, 100 people for the same position. So if you don't meet what their needs are, regardless of whether or not you have a dog, they may not hire you. It may not have anything to do with your disability whatsoever. It may simply be that you're not the right person for the job. It's called job hunting for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's not called job getting.
If you apply to be a rocket scientist or some kind of engineer and you only graduated high school and have no experience and you have a service dog, they're not saying no because you have a service dog. They're saying no because you might kill somebody.
So that's
not really stuff you can get on the job training for people.
Yeah. That's it for this week's edition of the Service Dog Show. Like I said, this is part one. We're going to revisit this and we're going to look at it I've already got employment. I've been working here for X amount of time, but I have become disabled or my disability has gotten to the point where I need help. As is in the case with veterans, I know it's your case, Scav, and I'm pretty sure it's the same thing with DV Nightmare, who will be our guest next week. It just got to the point where, look, my disability is becoming overwhelming and I need help and the service dog is what helps me. So then how do you go about requesting reasonable accommodation? We hope this has been educational. We hope this has been informative. If you have questions, concerns, or experience you'd like to share with us, you can message the Service Dog Show page on Facebook. It's just Facebook / The Service Dog Show. You can message either Scav at Scav and Scout Chronicles or me at PTS Dog. let us know. Let us know your thoughts. Give us your feedback. Let us know if you'd like to be on the show. Let us know if you know somebody who should be on the show. Thank you very much for joining us. As always, we are on DV Radio and only DV Radio, WDVR.
DV Radio.